Welcome to Women Made New. I'm your host, Kristalina Everett. Thank you for joining me. Today, we are going to hear from two beautiful women who are just living out the will of God in their daily struggles and their daily lives, but just striving for holiness as well. But before we get into it with them, we are first going to hear from Father Mark Barron from the Marian Helpers and Divine Mercy.
Do you want peace in your heart, in your family, in our world? Hi, I'm Father Mark Barron, and I have a challenge for you. Use the Divine Mercy image to participate in our Seal the Doorpost campaign to pray for peace in our world. In the Diary of St. Faustina, Jesus told her, "I promise that the soul that will venerate this image will not perish. I also promise victory over enemies already here on earth, especially at the hour of death. I myself will defend it as my own glory." Jesus also said, "Mankind will not have peace until it turns with trust to my mercy." Thanks be to God, we are out of what seems to be the worst of the pandemic, but we can still venerate the Divine Mercy image year-round. That's why we're bringing the Seal the Doorpost campaign back. So go get yourself this image and seal your doorpost. Together, let's pray for peace. And if you want, share your experience with us on social media by posting a picture or video of you sealing your doorpost, and be sure to use our hashtag #SealTheDoorpost. We would love to see pictures of you venerating your image. Together, again, let's pray for peace.
You can download a free Divine Mercy image by visiting thedivinemercy.org/image or texting image, that's IMAGE, to 49892. Again, download a free Divine Mercy image by visiting thedivinemercy.org/image or texting image, that's spelled IMAGE, to 49892. Thank you very much and have a blessed day.
Welcome to Women Made New. I'm your host, Kristalina Everett. Thank you for joining me. I am here with two beautiful women, Christina Hester and Ashley Cashel. Yes. Welcome to Women Made New, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
I love your stories. I love being with you at Book Group, and that's how I met these two beautiful women. And God is just putting so many beautiful women in my life because I think I've been not isolated, but I've been so busy. But I'm in a season now where I think God is bringing a lot of community into my life. So it's a whole new world for me, right? I went through a lot of different seasons, and this is just a whole new one for me and meeting you. But your stories are beautiful and I think so inspiring to women all over. And now, Christina, how old are you?
I'm 39.
And how old are you, Ashley?
I'm 32.
32. Wow, you both look so young. Oh my gosh. They look super young, everybody. Wow, you wouldn't even believe it. Okay, so Christina, let's start with you. Have you always been a cradle Catholic? Tell us about your journey. Just tell us about yourself.
Yep. So I was born and raised in Arizona as a Catholic. When I was in eighth grade, my dad got a job transfer to Georgia, and we moved across the country. And as soon as we were there, we kind of church shopped around a little bit and ended up finding ourselves in the Protestant church as a freshman. So from then on, I bought into the Protestant ideologies. And even though, like, if you asked me what my religion was, I would have told you I was, you know, raised Catholic, but I'm a practicing Protestant. And that's how it was. I married in the Protestant church to a wonderful man who is extremely supportive. And then fast forward to having kids. I had my first daughter, and she was, you know, born, and we were like, wow, like, okay, this is a lot of pressure all of a sudden, you know, like, I want to do the right thing. I want to improve myself. I want all these things for her that it just kind of awoken this new side of me. And suddenly I found myself wanting her to be baptized. Wow. I was like, where did this come from? You know, like my husband was a little confused because he's like, okay, here we are, this Protestant family. And all of a sudden you want your daughter baptized Catholic. But okay, like, let's do that.
Was his background Catholic at all? Like even just cradle Catholic, just straight up Protestant
straight
all his life?
Straight Protestant. Okay. His whole life. Yep. Mm-hmm. And so he went with me. We found a Catholic church and we started going to mass and had her baptized in the Catholic church. And it was a first yes, if you will. Like a first, like, come back.
God's invitation, yes. Like inviting the family, not just your daughter, but like all of you.
All of us. Okay. Yep. And so we did that and it was a struggle. Every week was a struggle. The baby cried. I could find 1,000 reasons not to go on Sunday and we fell away again. And then I had my second daughter and the same feeling came back. Like I got to have her baptized in the Catholic Church. And then fast forward, the kids are in preschool. And the preschool teacher was teaching them things of the world. My youngest came home and said, Mom, did you know girls can marry girls and boys can marry boys? And I was like, what?
Oh my gosh.
And so my husband and I looked at each other and we were like, what is happening? You know what? Like, wait a minute. And that's when it really started to turn in me. It was like, okay, we had them at a Christian school and it was kind of a wake up moment. Like, no, there's something else that you're being asked to go down a different path. Like this isn't the path for you. So we started school shopping, found ourselves here at St. John's. And as, you know, we engaged with the kids in the faith, I found myself asking questions and like, wow, like they're learning so much and yet I don't know any of this. You know, I sure, I was raised that way, but I don't know any of these details. And so in February, I went to Adoration for the first time. Had never heard of that.
What was that like? Tell me all about it. Yeah. Like walking in and like, what is this? Oh, my goodness.
I'm like looking around the room like, do I sit? Do I stand? Do I kneel? Do I pray? Do I sit here quietly? Like so many thoughts. Just like I was beating myself up. Constantly like, you're not even worthy to be in here.
Demonic
like,
dialogue, why? Baby. Let me tell yes. you what, I've experienced that in adoration too, especially before my, when I was trying and I was like, oh, I'm a loser. I have no business being here. You know, I get it. Yeah.
100%. So it was, you know, kind of an awkward thing. I'm like checking everybody out. Like, what do we do? What's the secret code here? Yeah.
So, that's normal, by the way, everybody. No, you're just baby steps, right? You don't know. And you just have to keep on. So how did you keep going?
Let us go into confession in May. And I hadn't been to confession since I was in high school, went to a Catholic high school, and hadn't been since kind of they make you go.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah.
You know, and before that, it was, I don't even know how long. So
were you scared?
Oh, 100%. I was so scared. And I went in there with like the, I'm sorry for this. And that's it. I promise, you know, like I just didn't, I don't know. I couldn't muster up the courage to say everything. Then I went back again and I said a little more. And then I went back again and said a little more. And then I went back again and I had a priest who kept asking the right questions. And took it deeper and took it deeper and
like and mining then, almost, yeah, right? Mining.
Yeah. And also asking like, who was I? Who are you? And then came the truth that I wasn't married in the Catholic Church. And he said, I'm really sorry, but I can't absolve you of your sins. You're Whoa. Living in sin. And that hit hard. I start bawling like, it took so much to even come in here. And then, you know, I can't even practice this faith that I'm trying to come back to. Set me kind of on like a little spiral. But I knew at that moment I had a choice. I was at a crossroad, right? Like you were saying, like it's that yes, that part of you that's like, okay, I can either say yes or I can turn away and tell everybody the story of this priest who rubbed me the wrong way. And instead I said, okay, I'm going to check this out. I'm going to figure out how to get married in the Catholic Church. I didn't even know what a convalidation was. That word was not in my vocabulary.
You're like, what a what? What's happening? Yes. You're just mad. I'm like, what did he just say to me? Where's a dictionary? You know?
Right. So here we go. We start the meetings with the...
Well, let's stop for a moment. Okay. I want to focus on something that you said. That we're talking about he's mining and mining, right? And each time you went to confession, it was like a little more, a little more. And I imagine Jesus just working with you, because ladies listening out there, and men and priests, I know there's a lot of different walks of life that listen to me, but one thing is, there is something that is keeping you from becoming the woman that God is calling you to be. And if you really go deep and you keep mining and mining, and the priest helped you do that, but in your walk with Jesus, in your relationship, it was like, there it was. He revealed it, and all of that digging and all of that yuck had to be pulled back. And that was the root, right? Mm-hmm. And in a lot of the times in our life, we don't want to go find that root because it is business. It is serious. And it's hard and it's not easy, but that's where the serpent's head needs to be almost cut off in our life, right? That's where the control is, and the wounds, and the just like the hiding and the sin stems and the vices, everything just like stems up and sprouts from that. Just like our good fruit will stem up and we'll have virtue, but this, you found the rot, right? Almost. And not to call your marriage rot, nothing like that, but it needed to just be shifted and changed and molded with the grace of God, right? But he revealed it to you. And when God does reveal those things to us, we do have that temptation to get mad, to get angry, to walk away and be like, you're kidding me. I'm blah, 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 you know, and like a spoiled child. Cause I remember those moments in my life where I was like, totally just brat, like you're kidding. No way. And then I'd come back humbly, but you found that root. And I bring all of this up to just go back to, it is so imperative and important in all of our lives and our walk with Jesus, and the whole purpose and mission of why we are here is, you have to find the things that are blocking you from becoming that woman, that man that God is calling you to be, because that is why we are here, to fulfill the mission, purpose, and plan that God has given us. And if that is blocking you, or there's something deep down that you know, you've got to go after it like a vengeance. So how did you go after that? Because after you break through from that wall, it's like a whole new world, wasn't it?
It is. Well, and then it sheds light in all the darkness.
That's it. It's like bust through, right?
It does. Mm-hmm. And so there was an IUD that needed to come out. There was, you know, conversations with my husband that I was terrified, absolutely terrified to have.
How did he handle all of this?
So we both work from home, and I'm, you know, I come home from all this and he sees me walk through the garage door, and my face is like that, like puffy, ugly cry kind of face, you know? And he's like on a meeting and like, I'm going to be right with you because you look terrible.
Oh, like something's wrong.
So, something's wrong.
Yeah.
So he comes in the kitchen and we're standing in the kitchen and he's like, what's going on? And so I tell him, you know, I went to confession and here's what happened. And I really want this. I really want, they call it convalidation. I'm not really sure what's involved, but I really want to be back in the church. I want to participate. I learned throughout this whole thing that I couldn't receive the Eucharist, mm-hmm. because I wasn't willing to, you know, turn from the sin of being in this marriage that wasn't considered what's the right word?
Valid.
Here? Valid, yeah.
But you didn't know at the time.
I didn't
You had know. No idea, right? So it's not like something you did maliciously or malice or, nope. You know, it was just, you had no idea.
And that's the grace right
yes.
there. That was the grace. And so, and he just looked me straight in the eyes and he was like, okay, I'm with you. It was that easy. And when I was walking out of the kitchen, I noticed above my sink is a cross. So there we were standing at the foot of the cross having this conversation. And he met me perfectly. God just put that little grace in my husband, and it was absolutely beautiful. going to the convalidation meetings was a test of obedience, and we made it.
Got through it. Not fun.
But he, and you know, I mean, it does. There's like those moments where you stop and you look at each other and you're like, oh, okay, I love you. And we're going to get through this, you know, and it strengthened our marriage in ways that I never thought was possible. Prior, like when I had my second kid, I had slipped into like a lot of postpartum depression, and it caused a lot of like severance between my husband and I. And this rebonded us in a way that I mean, it's better than it's ever been. Right.
Wow.
So
you have grace flowing in your marriage and your household and your relationship. And what is adoration like now for you?
I enjoy it as far as just being able to sit in the presence of God. In the midst of all this, the IUD came out. I got pregnant probably about the same time as our convalidation ceremony. Like that 9 months counts out.
Wow.
And so that was a huge blessing. And so now being a new mom, and again, after a lot of years, it's been absolutely beautiful to enjoy that gift and to go into adoration now with gratitude in my heart instead of question marks, instead of like frustration and awkwardness, to go in there and really accept the peace.
Oh, so in your times of struggling or going through it or entering into the church, how did you find support in everything that was going on?
Yeah, I was determined to find a community. I had never had Christian friends that, you know, could really like help me stay on the right track. And so I started looking in the church bulletins for Bible studies. I started, you know, going and hanging out where I could at like church events. And again, all this was awkward for me. Like it wasn't.
Well, is it for, hey, it was awkward for me coming and doing all of this. I'm not even kidding you. So I get the awkwardness, but the devil wants to use that to keep you from moving forward. So you just have to walk through your awkwardness and get over it, right?
100%, 100%. So I met a great group of women through a Bible study, you know, book study, I guess you could call it. And in the midst of all this, I don't know if I could have made it down the path without having them nearby to bounce things off of, to be able to say, you know, I really have all these doubts, or I really have all this, you know, just like not thinking that I can do this and not sure if this is really what I'm supposed to be doing, you know. And I didn't realize then, but I realize now, like that was the devil trying to get me off track. And having these amazing friendships and women supporting me, some of which, you know, are acquaintances, and even God uses them. The timing of some of those conversations, it's funny how he can work through anybody to keep you on track if you just continue to say yes to him.
It's really amazing how the evil one wants to put such issues between women. Competition, just what do they think of me, just wanting to be the best or one up, or just ripping each other apart, or backbiting, or talking about it, or gossip. You know what I mean? Just this tearing each other down. I can't stand it. I have no time for it. It makes me nuts because I see how good it is when women come together and how strong that we can be in other people's lives, in our lives, in our families, just supporting and uplifting each other. And it makes sense why the evil one wants those problems, wants that competition, you know. But at the end of the day, we all have a seat at God's table. And at the end of the day, we should all help each other get there, right? And that's beautiful, having that community. So if you're out there and you're feeling just overwhelmed or alone or just like struggling, because there was a time in my life where I didn't want community. I didn't want anyone. I didn't want any like, don't look at me kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you want to keep it to yourself. That isolation is not healthy. It's just not. And there are really good people probably at your church that will help you, and women that are going through the same thing as you. And nobody is perfect. I don't care who you are. Nobody is perfect and doing this perfectly, but we're all striving and we're trying, and that's what matters. And it just goes to show, and all of these stories of these women that I do, that yes to Jesus, and how incredibly important just those little yeses, those big yeses, but then the following little yeses of obedience are, right, in our life. And it's almost a protection against all of the demonic dialogue.
Yeah.
It's almost a protection against all of the doubt or things pulling you. But at the end of the day, if we're just obedient, what we know is God's will, and we bulldoze through that regardless of what people think. How did your family handle your conversion and his family handle your conversion?
Yeah, they were supportive. I think they truly saw the change in me. Like those friendships, the studying that we were doing, all the different pieces were coming together and making me realize God gave me the power to reject Satan. And in those moments where I would start feeling self-doubt, I became able to recognize it. And before it really beat me down, I was able to say, no, I cast out that feeling, whatever that negative thing was. God, bring me back into your peace. And it helped me to train my own mind to find find my way back faster. So I didn't slip back into some of these old practices or old things.
That was huge because you engaged in the battle, because when you are doing God's will, everyone, you're going to have such a battle. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be this like little cakewalk, you know, there is going to be a battle that you're going to have to engage in. And just like she trained her mind, which is huge that you said that, because it really is. And that demonic dialogue can weigh you down and keep you from walking through doors and things that God needs you to go through, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was major. So you have to show up to your fight, ladies. I keep saying that. And look how you kept showing up and showing up. And now you're here to say, look, I overcame. I had this victory over the evil one that he wants us to forget those things, but they're huge and they're big in our lives. So our yeses are massively, massively important.
Agreed.
Now, the women out there right now that are listening and maybe are at the bottom of that mountain that they know they have to climb, that they are just like, oh, this is ringing so true. Oh, no, right? What do you have to say to them that may be struggling, that want to enter into the church or want to enter just in full communion with the church and they're having a very hard time, or certain things they have to do and it just seems like it'd be easier to walk away? What do you have to say to those women?
Yeah, just start today. Just say yes today to the littlest feeling in your heart, whether it's going to mass, whether it's going to the adoration, whether it's having that conversation with your husband. Start saying yes. The more yeses that I said, the easier it got. And, I went back into scripture and it was like the piece that stuck out to me was God told us, you know, I knew you before I knit you in the womb, before he knew everything about you, before he even made you, and he still made you. So we're here exactly where we're meant to be.
That's beautiful. If you could say anything to women out there listening, what is the one thing you'd want to say to them and convey?
Say yes. And when you fall short, try again and don't wait. Try today. Even if it's a small thing, just keep going.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I love it. That was so awesome. Thank you so much. That's what I'm talking about, everybody. Their stories are just beautiful. These everyday Catholic women that you just see passing by you in church have their own battles and their walk and their struggle and things that they're going through, but they're striving for that holiness, that grace, and doing the will of God. And it all looks different for all of us, but we're all fighting the same fight, and that is just to do the will of God. And when we do that in our lives, it's unbelievable how it can touch. So don't ever underestimate the value of your own testimony to the world, and just being obedient in the little things, the big things, the small things, how that can change not only your life and your walk with Jesus, but the people around you. And so thank you for your yes. Thank you for doing this and your honesty and your openness. And I know it's going to help a lot of women out there. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
God bless you. Okay, Ashley, let's get into it with you now. So tell me, have you always been a cradle Catholic?
I have. I was born and raised Catholic, and I was actually born and raised in Arizona. So I've gone to Catholic school my entire life, pretty much, besides college. But I think I just ran the gamut of what it is to be a cradle Catholic, not so dramatically as Christina, like with moving away and stuff like that. But I kind of became a cultural Catholic in high school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that carried me a little bit once I graduated. And I found myself living almost two lives. So at the time, I was being mentored by three very solid Catholics who, after I graduated from Seton Catholic in Chandler, they just decided to basically adopt me as like a younger sister or a friend. And they would ask me very penetrating questions, invite me to dinner, ask me things like, is that true? Whenever I would say something and I would have to qualify it. And I was like, I don't know.
Like, wait, what? Yeah. Why are you asking me that? Okay.
Yeah. And then at the same time, I would go visit friends at U of A, and we would go to parties on the weekends, and they would invite me to sororities and all those functions and stuff like that. And so I was kind of like living a life in the valley and then escaping to Tucson to have what I thought was fun with friends. And it really culminated when I was asked by one of those three friends back here in the Valley if I would be on the core team at St. Mary Magdalene for the teens, the teen youth ministry. And I said yes because it sounded fun. Mm-hmm. And I was doing retreats at Seton with her already. And so it was just this invitation from the Lord to investigate a little bit more because I thought I could walk both like lines in a sense. I thought I could do both.
It's almost two versions of yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It literally is two versions of you and it clashes in the middle. Mm-hmm. And at some point one gets stronger than the other and one gives way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How did you navigate that? Because it's hard. I've lived that. I've been there. It's a hard place to be.
Yeah. So it really started to create a tension in me. Because at the same time, I was experiencing some interpersonal and familial struggles. And so that was just like the moral life was really present at that time and in a way that I couldn't ignore it. And so I ended up losing my voice one day when I went to Tucson just randomly. On my way there, I lost my voice.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I had to be DD. That night for the parties that my friends wanted to go to. And it was a really crazy night, really messy. And I was very glad that I was sober and just not drinking, not participating in that. And I got my friends and I out of some very sketchy situations. So it seemed like the Lord was like, this is where you could have been. And because you lost your voice on the way to Tucson, you weren't there. So it was very black and white in that moment. And I started...
Kind of shocking and scary all at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
And sobering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sobering.
Right?
Yeah.
Very sobering situation. And there is something, ladies, about not engaging. Because that's what I did one night when I was like into the partying, the drinking, the smoking. All of it, right? And one night I went there because I had my conversion, but I was still like really fragile, right? Mm-hmm. And I still was with the same friends and same just like, I didn't know how to navigate. Like shedding all of that, right?
Yeah.
And I remember going to this party and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to watch. And I just sat down and I was there for hours and I literally felt like I was watching a disgusting movie.
Yeah.
Over time, how people just, how their standards went down and girls sneaking behind places with guys and just how people were acting and coming up to me just drunk and just like, oh, come on. And I'm like, no, not tonight. Blah, blah. And I was just watching and I felt sick at the end of it. I was just like, this is gross. Like, oh, thank God. Like the scales finally came off and God sat my butt down and he's like, you watch what you're engaging in. Do you really want to go back to your own vomit? Mm-hmm. You know, kind of thing.
Yeah, totally.
And so I get it. It's a sobering kind of just sick feeling moment of, whoa, this is not okay.
Yeah. And it's also in that moment, it was like, this isn't what I want. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I was majoring in criminal justice. And so I wasn't really behaving in a way that exemplified that.
Yeah.
Just because of the close calls that we had had at those parties in Tucson. with the police in general. And so I started to subconsciously just distance myself from that and mm-hmm. pour myself into being a core member that was actually not a hypocrite to the best of my ability at the time.
Yeah.
And just investigating my faith in a deeper way, because even though going to Catholic school was a huge gift and a very big blessing, there was so much I didn't know. And I felt that there was a big deficit in my relationship with the Lord, even though I prided myself, I think erroneously, on the fact that I had a close relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I really didn't know him in my heart. Like, mm-hmm. I knew him like head knowledge, and he was the first person that I would run to in times of crisis. But besides that, I felt like I could handle life without him, in a sense.
But, almost put him in a box on Sundays, right?
Like medicinal use or, you know, emergency use
medicinal
only.
Medicinal use, or like he's your little buddy you talk to at night, you know? Yeah.
He's the glass you break when there's a fire or something.
Yeah.
And so that started to deepen my relationship with him, and I got back into the habit of going to adoration more regularly. And that was when the friend group kind of took a back seat, and the Lord really allowed me the time and the space to see the impact I had on teens and the impact that they were having on me as well. Because I think we go into ministry and we're like, I'm going to do the thing. I'm going to do this great
the
job.
Thing, yeah.
And it's going to be super helpful to other people. And then it's you who ends up being like healed and learning and all of that stuff. So
there's something you just said I think is important, is that you took a break from those people.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people listening right now that know they need to take a break from those people. And we know exactly what we're talking about. And they drag you down and you lower your standards and you don't want to be alone. And so you call them up or you be with them and you engage in things or go places that you know you shouldn't.
Right.
And it just needs to stop, and only you can stop it. And in the end, it's always never worth it.
Right.
It always leaves you empty and like, ugh, that yuck feeling. And it's like, okay, what was the point of that? Well, maybe this time I'll be different. And then you do it again. And it's not going to be.
Right.
You know, you're going to get the same thing, even though you're in a different place and a different clothes and a different time. Just cut it off.
Yeah.
Just take a break. And right now is a great time to, on Saturday, to maybe stop. Take a sobering look at your life, go to confession, and ask God for the grace to just step back from those people. And sometimes people are like, well, I don't know how to do that. I don't want to hurt their feelings. You know, I get that. But at the end of the day, it is not about them. This is about you and what God's asking you to do. And you can always just say, you know, I just need to take a break right now for me. I'm just going to change a couple things. And this isn't about you. I'm not mad at you, you know, but I just need to just stop for a little bit.
Yeah.
Something. But if you know you need to stop seeing certain people or break up with somebody, just it's a matter of just doing it. Just jump off that cliff God's asking you to jump off and break up with that person, or don't call those friends, or don't text them, or don't look on social media and see what you're missing out on. But maybe just really go inward and see what Jesus is asking of you, because I know it's not easy. Okay, so after you did that and you really embraced your life being a core member and all of that, how did your life change? How did you embrace that relationship with Jesus? Because it's hard.
Yeah, so I think the Lord knows what he's doing, but hindsight is 2020. So when the Lord kind of gave me a little bit of like an indifference towards those friends, because I realized shortly after that we weren't wanting to head in the same direction necessarily. So C.S. Lewis in his Four Loves, one of them is philia, and that's the main one for friendship. And he describes it as heading in the same direction towards Jesus. And so like that's like a true friend, is someone who's heading in the same direction as you. And I was just comparing the fact that some people were heading towards the fun that they could have in the moment, and it wasn't fulfilling me. I was having more edifying conversations and life-giving experiences that were leading me closer to the Lord here back at home versus with friends I had grown up with who were just choosing the college life kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's this way of thinking, tell me, of this is just what we're supposed to do? I'm a teenager. I'm in college. I'm supposed to be having fun. Yes. I'm supposed to be living it up right now. I mean, and you know, I realize more and more, and even with my own teens, how indoctrinated they are from a young age of how they are supposed to be and act when they get a certain age or certain things. And they think, well, my room's supposed to be a mess. I'm a teenager. And it's just like, are you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
But then I'm stepping back and really looking at the culture and the things they're watching and the things that I used to watch. And I just take my own example of the things that I was almost indoctrinated with. Like, well, I'm supposed to have a boyfriend. It's supposed to be messy. It's like what I'm being normal. This is what normal people do. But what is normal?
Right.
And they normalize the sin and the filth and the mess and the crazy and the drinking and the partying. And you got to get it out now. When it's like, no, you don't. There's nothing to get out.
Right.
Instead of just losing your self-worth, you know, losing yourself in it. And that's what I see in my own life. But there's something to be said about you don't have to do this. It's almost like they feel like they have to go through that in order to, like, become an adult.
Yeah. It's funny because at the same time that that was going on in my life, I had a ton of teens who were going to graduate from high school. And they were telling me, like, I'm going to go and be a freshman in college. And I need to make those mistakes.
Yes. And see, that's like, what I'm talking about. It's
not.
This garbage lie that is almost this generational, like, demon of just, like, whispering in the youth's ear, like, you have to do this.
You have to rebel.
Yes, you have to just get it out of your system now.
Yeah.
And it's not true.
Mm-mm. No. And I would routinely tell them, like, you don't want to make that mistake. You, like, the goal is to not make, like, it's to make the least amount of mistakes, in fact, I think. But there is, I think, an idea that if they don't make the mistakes, they won't learn from them, like, the necessary lessons, maybe. So there's that lie as well, where it's like, if I don't make mistakes, I won't be wise. Or,
and I missed out on the fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you have FOMO, but it's like, what do you have a fear of missing out on? Like, is it virtuous? And that's just not the question that we're asking teens and young people, I don't think. And so, but those are the questions that I was being asked back here by those three really good Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was invited to go on as a chaperone to the March for Life in DC as one of the female chaperones. And at this time, I was also intensely afraid of going to confession because I had a bad perception of God the Father.
So many people do because they have bad relationships with their own father and they project that onto him.
Yeah.
So I understand that.
Yeah. So there's an intense fear there that like the Lord would reject me or be mad with me or that he wouldn't forgive me. And I knew that they were all lies, but it definitely in the moment is like, no, I'm just afraid I'm not going to go. Like I would get in line so many times.
No way. And why? And get
and
off.
Leave,
oh my gosh. No.
Yes, or I would be in adoration and the line would be behind me and I'd be like, I'm good. I'm okay. I'm just gonna...
Not today.
Not today, Lord. Like, maybe some other time. So it was like St. Augustine where it was like, make me chase, but not yet. But like, make me repentant, but not yet. Or brave, but not yet.
Wow. What was your biggest fear?
Just that he would be mad. That he would be mad at me for like failing or something like that.
So it was the lie you believed that kept you from God's grace.
Yeah.
So many people.
Yeah.
Allow themselves to believe a lie like that, that keep them from God's grace. And it's so not true.
No, it's not true at all. And so I credit two of my teens at the time who came on that trip with us because we had to spend 8 hours in the Basilica, the National Shrine in DC to get our seats for Mass. Yeah. So in order to get a seat at all or to get a good seat, you had to wait and camp out, essentially. And,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And you could go in groups to, like, the side altars. So I had done that, and I was sitting in the pew, and our teens were trickling back in, and I knew that there was confession down in the crypt. But I was like, nah, I'm okay. Like,
wow.
I'm not going to go. And Pope St. John Paul II has been a huge spiritual father in my life. And so I had spent time earlier that morning kneeling on a kneeler that he had knelt on and prayed in one of the side chapels there. And I had spent some time praying on that kneeler where he had knelt. And I was just thinking about him and thinking about the healing presence of his intercession in my life. Because he had come, the Lord really gave him to me in a sense when I was really struggling. And I needed a spiritual father for guidance and just the gentleness of his intercession and his encyclicals and everything that he had written and said. really poured into my life in a very crucial time.
Were you at any World Youth Days that he was at?
No, I wasn't. But a friend of mine was at the one in Canada. Mm-hmm. And my dad actually was an usher when he came here.
Wow, very
Arizona.
Cool.
Yeah, so it was really awesome. So I have some ties to him, but a friend of mine gave me a crucifix that he blessed. And so I like attached it to my rosary. But I was sitting there and another core member who's a really good friend of mine was sitting in front of me. And one of my teens turns to me and he goes, "Did you get to go to confession?" And I looked at him and I was like, "No, Jackson, I did not get to go to confession. Why?" He's like, "Well, we're all pretty much back and you and Brandon, the other core member, should go." And I was like, no. I was like, "Dude, no." And Brandon was like, "Oh my gosh, thank you so much. I would love to go to confession. Let's go, Ashley." And so I'm shaking in my boots. I'm like, this is not okay. And so I went back to the kneeler where JP2 was. I had knelt before and I just like prayed for so much bravery to go. And I was like, "I need you to be a spiritual father for me. I need you to pray all the prayers for me because I'm going to run. Like, that's my MO.
Wow.
And I'm going to lie. And I don't want to lie to my, like the teens. You know, I want to be a good example. I don't want to live this way anymore. Like, I don't want to be, because I knew I was being hypocritical.
Yeah.
Like, I was telling them how important these sacraments were. And I wasn't, you know, walking the walk. I wasn't being truthful. And so I get down there, there's like three people in line and I was like, dang it. So I can't use the line as an excuse. Great. And I'm sitting there in the chapel and the confessional to the side, to my left opens up and I'm like, okay. So I took a deep breath. I had examined my conscience. I knew all the things that I needed to say, the mortal sins that I had on my heart that I needed to confess that I had committed, out of fear. So like fear is a really big motive for my sin. And that's kind of like the root of like the motivation. And so, I walked in there and I'm just asking JP2 to be present. I'm like, "I don't know how you're going to do it, but I need you. Like, I'm not strong enough to do this." And I kneel down behind the screen and a Polish priest.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. A Polish priest begins us in the sacrament. And I just kind of laughed. I was like, "Wow. Okay. Thank you." Like, so huge grace moment and a really big, conversion occurred in that confessional because I'm also pretty prideful. And so when I know things, like I have a really good memory. And so when the priest was asking me which sin I thought was the worst, I named every sin besides the answer. And then he goes, "Well, you have one left. Would you like to try one more time?"
Wow.
I was like, "Sure, Father. Yes, it's this one." He was like, "That's right." And so he gave me all the reasons why that was. And it was just really beautiful. And that kind of started a deep intimacy with the Lord.
Was it like coming out of confession?
It was, I cried a lot.
I bet. Like,
yeah,
just
I had to
healing
take a moment.
And just like it's
yes.
over. Like
yeah.
it's done. The struggle,
yeah.
the battle, it's over.
Yeah, it's over.
Like you conquered the fear.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the
that
thing.
Mountain.
Yes, you climbed
yeah.
the mountain.
Yeah.
And that's what I keep saying. Okay, what is it that is keeping you from becoming the woman God is calling you to be? And she even said it. She's like, "It was fear."
Yeah.
It was fear that was keeping me from stepping in to the direction God needed me to go. And how many of you out there right now have fear of not letting go of something, of having fear of just showing up to something or severing something in your life? Do not let fear control you, ladies. It is not of God, and he will hold your hand and he will catch you on the other side.
Yeah, totally.
They don't realize that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think too, something that's just coming to mind right now in the catechism is when Adam and Eve committed original sin and like the fall happened. The line that's coming to me right now is like, man let trust in his creator die in his heart. And so I think that fear was also keeping me from trusting the Lord, that he would be good to me, that he loves me, that, you know, I'm a beloved daughter. And beloved daughter is actually an identity that I've been just like chasing all my life and didn't know because I'm the oldest of four. And so I think as the oldest daughter, I take seriously my responsibility as a big sister. And I have a really big desire to protect people. And so I have tried to, in a sense, be the protector, but would only bring God into situations when I needed him the most or when I couldn't do it. Because I would always tell the Lord, like, I got this.
Self-sufficiency.
Ungodly self-reliance. Yes.
Totally. That's a problem.
Yes. Yes. And it's been a big barrier between me and Jesus and what I think he might be calling me to in my vocation as well. And so I actually just got back from a huge healing retreat, like, weekend. So this is still something that I'm processing, like, this identity as daughter, and this, like, healing through that, and healing my fear, and healing some wounds of, like, abandonment too. Mm-hmm. Because I think, like, when the Lord is trying to draw us closer to him, he also gives us the struggle that will build the virtue that he needs to build in us. Mm-hmm. And so when I had, you know, just kind of renounced, in a sense, my, like, that college life, or that those relationships with friends who weren't heading in the same direction as me, and I wanted Jesus, and I wanted these deeper conversations, and I wanted to know who I was, I encountered some familial struggles that I couldn't ignore, and that kind of took up all my time. And the big temptation was to abandon them. And I would constantly ask the Lord, like, when can I be done? Like, when am I done? You know? And the Lord pretty much sent, obviously, my youngest brother into our family. And he would do something or say something that would just be a very clear sign that I was not allowed to run.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that was a huge part of me having to rely on the Lord, because I was making myself miserable trying to do it by myself, or with, you know, just allowing the Lord a little bit of leeway.
Don't you think, like, in our society, that feminist kind of movement, like, we can do everything and I can do it, I don't need help, I can, like, I'm stronger and I'm better, and just, like, the self-reliance, there's almost this thread we're always hearing of, like, we've got this, we can do it, just keep on, keep pushing, keep going, because you can be strong, but you can do it on your own.
Right, right.
And it's garbage.
It's total garbage.
It's such garbage. Yeah. And I realized there was so much of that, but with my, like, own pride, just like you're saying, it's like entangling your pride, that there's a moment you have to surrender. You literally have to say, okay, Lord Jesus, I'll let you fight this battle. Yeah. I'm not going to open my mouth. I don't know better. There's nothing I could say or do right now that is going to be better than how you can come in and defeat this, because I can't, and I'm not doing a good job at it either.
Right.
And I need you to do the heavy lifting, because I'm getting crushed alive under what I thought I could lift and carry and manage. I can't.
Yeah.
And so there's this humbleness about it, but also this relief once you do it of, you know what, God's got this. This isn't my problem. And I need you to help. And asking for help is really hard, especially when it comes to yourself and your spirituality and things you have to admit, like, I can't handle this.
Yeah. And correcting, like, really bad habits. Confession ended up being the best thing ever for this, because when you confess specifically something, so I would initially have qualifiers in confession, where I would go and I would confess my sins, but I would have, like, qualifiers for them. And one priest told me, he was like, why are you trying to excuse your sin? I was like, well, that's a good point. I don't know why. And he's like, it's because you don't want to be misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like, that's not the point. The point is bringing your weakness and your sin to the Lord and telling him, you know, deliver me, redeem me, heal me. Because all of those parts of you that want to make yourself better because you know you should be a certain way and you're not, like, we are who we don't want to be every day.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's so true.
Yeah. And so, but it's literally by the grace of God that we become who we are truly. And you can't strong arm your way into that.
I love that. Say that again. What?
You can't strong arm your way into becoming who God created you to be.
That's right. It's not the way. And so many people are misinformed or confused and think you can, and that's how it is. And it's really not. It's really through the humility. Mm-hmm. And I get it that you are stronger, but Jesus makes it's with him, right?
Yeah.
It just is. There's no other way. And as you kind of just shed the world, right? That's really what it is. And I see it in myself, and I see it in a lot of the women that I'm talking to, is as you're getting closer to Jesus and you're having this conversion of heart and having this conversion in your life, there's almost this incremental shedding of this person you are in the world. I mean, told who you are and the lies that you believe. And as you get closer to Jesus, it's like you're stepping into God, who he created you to be on a spiritual level, mm-hmm. and not on a fleshly level. Yeah. Not, and you're shedding the flesh almost of the world and what it wants to just cling on to you, right?
Yeah.
And as you get closer, the devil has got to go. He cannot stand the light.
Absolutely.
And it will eventually go away. Those bad habits, the way you dress, the things you listen to, where you go, you don't desire those things anymore. It mm-hmm. just, it slowly just kind of gets yeah. out of your system almost.
Yeah. You don't even really look at them anymore. Mm-mm. It's kind of just like I wouldn't do that anymore. Like I wouldn't do it. And it's just it's almost like out of sight, out of mind in a sense.
Don't you feel like you're talking about two different people?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think that's very biblical in a sense, because I think of Saul and he became St. Paul, and or Simon, he became Peter. Like the Lord asks you to become a new person after every encounter. And you're always new after an encounter with the Lord. Like you hear scripture and you are changed forever. It's the living word of God. Like you cannot walk away from a mass, a sacrament, reading scripture, 15 minutes even spent in adoration, if that's what you can give. Like you were always changed.
It changes you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true.
And I do like what you said about like different people or like shedding the world. Because I had a really profound moment with the Lord in prayer where he was indicating to the cross on this hill and I was standing there. But in front of me was an army of different versions of myself that like represented each desire that I had.
Wow.
Yeah. And I kind of worked through them pretty quickly. Like some of them were like, you want to own horses. You like wearing plaid. I like, you know, like different like silly ones, but then other ones were like a little bit more substantial. Like, cause all my desires are not necessarily bad ones. So the bad ones were easy to like ignore. But the one that I landed on that I wasn't able to defeat necessarily, was this version of myself that had created, like I was covered in dented armor. It's like I had created armor for myself to protect myself from all these things. But what I was really doing was I was inadvertently protecting myself from the Lord, who I shouldn't ever protect myself from.
Yes.
And that was a huge moment of clarity and healing, because the Lord asked to like strip me of that armor so that he could give me his own.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love it. Okay, we're coming to a close. This has been amazing. If you had one thing that you could tell women right now and that are struggling or maybe scared of confession, I don't know, what is it you would want to say to them?
That you don't have to be brave by yourself. That the Lord will give you everything that you need, that you just need to take that first step. And say yes, kind of like what Christina was saying, is that it's just those small yeses, one at a time, and you have to trust that the Lord will get you there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you have
been
amazing.
Both of you have been just phenomenal. So thank you.
Thank you.